Yes, sir. Welcome back. You are tuned into the Commissioner's Conversation. I am your host, Commissioner Gordon.
You are now tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Commissioner Gordon.
This episode is brought to you by our partners at Coffee and Kush. And as always, by my good people at Greenwood Whiskey. It's more than just a drink. It's a movement. Available online at www.greenwoodwhiskey.com. Greenwood Whiskey. It's celebration whiskey. What's going on, everybody? Whew, so much to talk about, I feel like. Since we last talked, man, the world went crazy. Yeah, we had all kind of madness going on up in D.C. COVID numbers are higher than damn near ever. And it's all kind of trickling over into the world of sports. So we'll chop it up a little bit. What do you say? So this week we'll talk about the reign and dominance that is of the University of Alabama Crimson Tide. We'll also talk about how COVID has struck in the NBA and why didn't they go into the bubble? It only made sense to me. Well, we'll do a little digging and we'll figure out the pros and cons of bubbling up if you were the NBA. And then I want to go back and I want to look at last week's matchups a little bit in the playoffs and this week's matchups. So, without any further ado, it's time for I Told You, My Bad. Reese Boogie, music! It's time for
y'all right, all right. You was right, I was wrong.
Told y'all, y'all better believe it.
Yeah, man, I told y'all. And starting this thing off, man, I want to go ahead and talk about how I told y'all. Yes, I told y'all. The gift that keeps on giving. One Mr. Kyrie Irving. Yeah, Kyrie. So remember when we were just talking about like how DC was going crazy and every Trump follower seeming like raided the Capitol and they had this big demonstration over there in the Capitol building. And I guess as a solo protest, Kyrie decided he was going to take him a little Kyrie time to reflect on the nation. But when I saw this immediately, it came out in a tweet and it basically said Kyrie had taken the personal leave from the team. And he hadn't even talked to anyone. He hadn't told the coach. He didn't tell any general managers. He just took him some time. Well, since then, they've talked and they've decided that, you know, he was going to take a little solo protest, little Kyrie protest, Kyrie only protest, let's say. And since they decided that it was cool, they were going to let Kyrie do whatever the hell he wants to do, because seemingly enough, he's going to do it anyway. For his Kyrie-only protest, it was cool. They'd come back and they let him get him a little time. And while they were letting him get his time, a video pops up and it appears that Kyrie Irving is at a party celebrating his sister's birthday, which, no problems there. But there are all types of people there and no one is masked up. No one. So now the NBA has to come up with some kind of conclusion on, are they going to isolate him and quarantine him before he can get back? And so needless to say, it's going to be a second before we see Kyrie on the floor again. Yeah. So the Kyrie only protest turns into a Kyrie only quarantine down there, because he is now on the watch list or the ISO list. So, you know, I told y'all in the beginning that this whole Kyrie thing was going to be a roller coaster. And I knew it because I've seen Kyrie be Kyrie. And Kyrie's told you, you know, what he said, oh, we really ain't got no coach, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like we can all coach the team. I can coach a little bit, you coach a little bit, shoot, you know. I'm just going to be Kyrie out here in these streets. You know what? I need a vacation. I'm going to go chill out in Jersey with my sister, lay low. Folks over here in D.C. tripping. But yeah, man, I told you, dog. I told you that Kyrie was going to be Kyrie Irving. I told you. Keeping in I told you so fashion, last time we talked, I told you that I thought one Mr. Devontae Smith would win the Heisman. And he did. And not only did he win the Heisman, this dude went crazy in the first half of the national championship as Alabama beat the Ohio State University. And we'll get to more of that later. But the dude went nuts. Like, I don't know why. Like in basketball, when somebody's doing that, they put what's called a special defense, like a boxing one or a triangle in two, and they try to create someone to stay on this guy all the time. And they do it in football too, but for whatever reason, they decided they didn't want to do it to Devontae Smith, but Devontae Smith made them pay. And not only did he show how deserving of the Heisman he was, he also showed them that he should probably be one of the top picks chosen in this year's draft. Had this Trevor and Justin Fields and everybody needing a quarterback hype not be around, Devontae Smith, he might be number one. But because it's Jacksonville, it's the Jets, it's all of these players, I mean, all these teams that need quarterbacks, it's going to be Trevor. But I'm sitting here telling you, I told you. We also talked last week about Doug Peterson and how he assisted, or his role in, the Philadelphia Eagles tanking. And I told you that it was blatantly obvious what was going on. I told you that it shunned a negative light on the team, and it kind of reaffirmed what some people always say about sorry teams or teams that aren't doing as well as they like to do, is that they go in and out there and they tank. And as much as people try to say that there is no tanking, we were just witness to otherwise. Well, Doug Peterson was called into the office with the general manager and the owner of the Eagles, and the conclusion came out to be that Doug Peterson was fired. Yeah, he was fired. And I won't say it's solely based on the tanking, but what wound up happening is, I think the general manager had basically asked that he get some new guys in, like a new offensive coordinator. He get some younger, fresher ideas, because clearly the ideas that he won with, you know, he won the Super Bowl with 3 years ago, we've seen them. Everybody's seen that. We got to come up with some new stuff. So Doug Peterson kind of pushes back, and apparently he wants to promote his guys from within. Naturally, everyone does, right? You always want your guys to come forward and to succeed, and if you can help in that process by any means, you'll do that. Doug wanted his guys to be promoted. Management wanted new guys to come in. They wanted new ideas, new innovation, and I guess to they fired him. You know, I guess the conclusion came out to be, we're just part ways. I don't think it was mutual, because I don't think anyone is going to be like, man, you know what? Well, F it. I quit. I don't think he quit. I think they fired him. Oh, I know they fired him, because that was the report. So while I didn't tell you Doug Peterson was fired, was going to get fired, I did tell you that Philly didn't like that. Not one bit. So apparently they didn't like it at all. But I told you. I will say, my bad. Well, my record was 4-2 in the playoffs, and I'm going to give you the two. They're going to be my bads because I clearly thought that Seattle was going to do more or better than they did against the Rams. And I think I wanted Russ to win so bad that I picked the team, overlooking the fact, I even told you that the offense had been looking stagnant a little bit lately. But I believe that in the bright lights of the playoffs, that Russell Wilson would turn it on and he would work his magic. Well, when you are facing Aaron Donald, it's hard to get that magic, bro. When you got Jalen Ramsey in the backfield, it's hard to get that magic. They pressured Russ. They jumped passes. Jalen Ramsey jumped on the pass and took it to the house. I think that was Jalen Ramsey. But they jumped passes, took it to the house. And essentially, the LA Rams defeated the Seattle Seahawks 30-20. And I thought it would be the other way around, man. My bad. My bad. Speaking of, I thought it would be the other way around. Pittsburgh Steelers got out here and had their ass handed to them by the Cleveland Browns. Yeah. I've never seen Cleveland look that good, like, ever. 41 years old, I ain't never seen Cleveland look that good. Have you seen Cleveland? When the last time you seen Cleveland beat the hell out of somebody? Yeah, exactly. You ain't seen it. You, even if you're a Browns fan, you ain't seen Cleveland beat the hell out of somebody. But they came out and they beat the hell out of the Steelers. And it was turnovers, like Pouncey threw one over the head of Big Ben. That resulted into a touchdown. Big Ben is out here looking like he's 75 years old, and he really needs to hang it up. Like, we'll get to that a little later also. But I thought that my belief in the Steelers was that they would get it together and they would turn it on like they usually do, because typically the Steelers are a pretty clutch team. And this last week, they were not. They look bad, and they deserve to be home. So they lost to the Browns 48-37. The score sounds a lot better than the actual game would show you. So if you watch the game, you know, 48-37, that's not the actual loss, because it looked like it might have been 62-37. Because it could have been, it should have been. But shouts out to Baker Mayfield and the gang. They got it done. And my bad, bro. My bad. I hope you wasn't betting.
Commissioner Gordon.
All right. I don't know if you noticed, because you might be so wrapped up in football and it's playoff time, but the NBA is in effect and the NBA is playing. I told you about Kyrie Irving doing his Kyrie-only protest. But what's happening now is, if you haven't looked up, the NBA has a COVID problem. Yeah. The COVID problem. On Monday, the NBA had to postpone two games. It was Dallas and New Orleans, and Chicago and Boston. In about the 3 weeks that basketball has been playing, NBA has been playing, they've already had to postpone about five games. They played two games where it was like the bare minimum on the roster. Like, if you got eight guys, you can go. It's basically the rule. And they had a bunch of games. One were like Philly. Philly, it got so bad with Philly. Philly basically only played seven guys, but they dressed eight. They had to dress someone who was injured so that they could play the game. and meet the 8-game minimum. The Celtics themselves have had 3 games in a row postponed due to COVID. Like, 3 games. I think Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown, they have a bunch of people that are out there that they don't, like, they're on quarantine. So they only have, like, 8 guys. Or they only, I think the Celtics have 8 guys, but for whatever reason, their games are being still postponed. But yeah, in the case of the 76ers, Doc Rivers is concerned that, not so much as concerned about COVID, but he's concerned about the minutes that his guys are playing. Because usually in a game, you have an option to have about 10, 12, 13 guys, something like that. But and you can go, some teams go 10 deep because you need guys to come in and steal minutes for situations, for fouls, anything, matchups, all types of situations. So what happens is when you don't have those guys, when you don't have a full 12 and you only got 7, now I got like 3 or 4 guys that are legit playing like 40 minutes. And then you play 40 minutes and then you turn around, you get a travel day, and then you get those same guys have to play 40 minutes again and again and again. And so what it's doing is he's concerned about the wear and tear of his team, not so much as opposed to the COVID problem. But yeah, and I'll say this, like, it's not so much like there are guys that are having COVID and coming up positive, but it's not the, like, if I tell you, like, hearing all that, saying 5 games have been postponed, the Celtics have had 3 of them, 2 games have had the bare minimum amount of players that can play on the roster. If you hear all those numbers, what you'll think is, damn, like, everybody in the league got COVID. It's not what it is. So it's more of a precautionary measure. So what's going on is it's what's called contact tracing, which is essentially like you've come in contact with someone that has COVID or that's been positive. So now I have to sit you down and isolate you. So, and that's what's happening. So prime example, going back to the Philly game, Seth Curry had COVID, right? Seth Curry came out and he was positive with COVID. But listen to how this played out. Seth Curry took a test that morning. I think it was Thursday morning. He comes to the game. You get there early, do all your stuff. He wasn't going to play because he was injured. He has an ankle injury. But what he's doing is he's talking to equipment managers. He's talking to guys on the bench. He's talking to coaches. He's talking to all of these guys. And then they finally figure out right before the second quarter of the game. I thought these dudes had rapid tests. But he took the test that morning and probably like 3 minutes left to go in the first quarter. They figure out, oh, damn, Seth Curry got COVID. So now someone has to go to Seth and say, hey, Seth, you need to get your ass up out of here before you infect this whole building. And that's what happened. So now you have in contact tracing. Now I got to go to who did he talk to? Did he shake your hand? Did y'all have a conversation? Was he helping you warm up? Did he give you some tips? You know, I have to go back and figure out who he interacted with. And now I have to sit all of them down too. They can't play either. So that's what's happening. It's happening with the Celtics. It's happening with the Mavericks. It's happening with a bunch of other teams. So these guys have to be quarantined for 7 days. Just because they've interacted with someone who's possibly COVID positive. But that brings me to the point that we talked about before, even when we talked about the season coming back. And that's like, why didn't the NBA just do what? Go into the bubble. Like last year, while some people hated it, some people loved it. But when the NBA went down to Disney in Florida, we got to see basketball. And there were very few traces of COVID infections coming in. Guys reported in, some might have been positive as they came in, and others quarantined before they got there and isolated themselves from the family, but they didn't do it. So why didn't the NBA go into the bubble? Well, I'll give you one reason. Can you guess? The answer is money. Yep, money. And I'll give you the reason why it's money. I mean, that's ultimately the reason for all of this stuff. That was the reason for college football happening. That was the reason for baseball happening. That was the reason for all of these sports being played, because these are businesses. We look at them because they're playing games as entities that don't need money to survive. We just think you cut the lights on, you roll a ball out there, and they go to play basketball. But these are businesses. And to conduct that business, guess what? The NBA spent over $180 million creating an isolated bubble at Disney World. $180 million. The money was well spent because, like I said before, they had low COVID numbers and you still had your product put out there. But the NBA still lost money to the tune of $1.2 billion. Let me say that again. $1.2 billion with a B. Dollars. So what wound up happening is the league lost over $800 million at the gate. So they lost money because fans couldn't see the game. The entire league lost $800 million because there was no one to buy a ticket and sit in the stands. They lost an additional $400 million in sponsorship and merchandise. Well, usually you get your butt in the building, you go have you a Coca-Cola. So Coca-Cola spending that money to give you to sit out there. And then what you'll do, what would you do? You'll get up and then you'll go to the whatever the store, Hawk Shop or the Net Shop or whatever, wherever it is that you are, and you go buy a jersey, T-shirt, hat, sweater, whatever. But if you're not there, you're really not likely to do that. If you're not at the game, you're not. Why would you buy a jersey? Very few of you are going to go online and actually buy a jersey unless you just see something you absolutely want. So $1.2 billion were still lost. And what happened was they were considering coming back. They were when they were coming back, this week's projections, this year's projections were basically going to be worse. They'd done the numbers, they crunched it. They lost 1.2. This year, had they done that again, they were basically set up to lose $4 billion. As a league, as a whole, $4 billion. And I don't know a business that can sustain a $4 billion loss after they just lost $1.2 billion. So to bring it to an individual squad, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, yes, from Shark Tank. Yes, he... She's looking at me. Yes, Mark Cuban from Shark Tank owns the Dallas Mavericks. And he was talking on a Dallas radio station. And they basically asked about it. And he said, when this whole thing is over, am I going to lose a lot of money this year? Yes. No question about it. More than $100 million when this is all said and done? Yes. No question about it. He's going to lose $100 million. That's just one team. See what I'm saying? $100 million. Put it to you like this. In the year 2000, Mark Cuban bought the entire squad, Dallas Mavericks, for $280 million. And now here he is, set to lose $100 million due to COVID. But what's happening is they didn't go to the bubble, and now this outbreak has happened all of a sudden. So what's going on is the NBA has recently, today, this is Tuesday, by the way, tightened up the protocol and rules for things like no guests in the hotel. Previously, you were able to have up to two guests. You could have friends and family, up to two people in your hotel while you were traveling. None of that. If they're not a part of the team, they can't be in the room with you. Sounds logical to me. Players are having to wear a mask on the bench. I thought they already had to do that, but I hadn't really paid attention and focused on it. But I thought that was only right. Players have to wear a mask on the bench. They're keeping meeting times down to less than 10 minutes, and everyone in the room has to be at least 6 feet apart, and they have to be wearing masks when you're out at these games. So if you've watched the games, what you'll see is these dudes are still out here interacting like ain't nothing going on. So you might see two guys at half court. One might have a mask. One guy might not. And they're sitting there talking and they're catching up, you know, and they're kicking it or whatever. But the NBA is saying, cut that shit out. No more of this socializing. No more of this standing around and talking to an extended amount of time. Fist bump, elbow, going about your business. And that, once again, makes perfect sense. But those are some of the rules. I'm not going to go down the entire rule book and lay it out in Article 2, Section 1. I'm not doing that. If you want to see all the rules, you can go to NBA.com. I'm pretty sure they will lay everything out for you. But I just wanted to give you some clarity as to why the NBA didn't bubble up. They lost it cost $180 million to get into that situation. And you still lost about $1.2 billion and projected to lose $4 billion. So, money, man. It's all about the M-O-N-E-Y.
Commissioner Gordon.
So, I don't go out a lot, but I'm out, you know, going to the grocery store, doing the necessities. And typically when I'm out, someone will look at me and say, damn, that's a dope-ass hoodie. Where did you get that? And what I have to do is tell them I got this from my good friends at 323 Custom Apparel. I'm like, yo, where is that? Well, as of right now, what you do is you have to go online and you can shop with them. Preferably, check them out on their Instagram page at 323_custom_apparel. You let them know what you want and he'll hook you up. At 323_custom_apparel. Let me say that again for you. At 323_custom_apparel. You let them know what you want. They'll hook you up. They'll put you in the game. And you'll be out here stunting on everybody because you don't look like them. 323 Custom Apparel. Make your clothing your statement.
Commissioner Gordon.
While we're here, man, I want to send a big congratulations to the Alabama Crimson Tide. Yes, Alabama did it again. And who told you? Haha, your boy, I told you. Alabama defeated the Ohio State Buckeyes 52-24. And this brings Nick Saban to 7 national titles, 6 with Alabama. He just passed Bear Bryant with national titles. So he got 6 with Alabama, 7 total, because he had 1 with LSU. And like I said, this probably makes him the greatest college football coach of all time. And I'm going to take out probably. In my book, Nick Saban is the greatest college football head coach of all time. And part of what makes Saban so great is the fact that he's always adjusting. He's always staying with the times as opposed to catching up with the times. If you think about it like this. When Nick Saban first, when he was with Michigan State, when he was at LSU, they were very run heavy. Very pro style offense, traditional pro, what you think of as traditional pro style offense. That's what he did. But now if you watch that team last night, that wasn't the same type of offense. That probably wasn't the same type of defense that he's been running. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was the same, but it had different variations, different spinoffs. Because ultimately what Saban has done is basically been he's been great at keeping innovative football minds around him. And we talked about that earlier with Doug Peterson. Peterson wanted to promote his guys, and there's nothing wrong with promoting your guys. But what management was saying to him was, bring in some innovative talent. Bring in someone new who's thinking outside the box. And that's what Nick Saban does. Nick Saban pulls from some of the brightest minds in the football game. And on top of that, he's able to recruit so heavily because I genuinely feel like he's one of these coaches who legitimately cares about his players. Like, he told a story not too long ago about how Musa Muhammad was one of his wide receivers at Michigan State. And apparently it got into some trouble. I can't remember what he did, but apparently it got into some trouble. And everyone around them was saying, let him go, cut him, send him home, all of these things to get rid of him. And what he said was, no, Musa Muhammad is better served here in this program than out in the streets. And he kept going with the story about Musa Muhammad, and essentially what he said was the guy, and we all know Musa Muhammad, good player, had 13 or 15 year career in the NFL. His daughter apparently went to Princeton. He's a family man, and he's doing big things in the community. Now, had Nick Saban released him and told him to hit the road when he got into whatever trouble he had gotten into at Michigan State, who knows what kind of guy he would be? Would his daughter still be attending Princeton or graduating from Princeton? I don't know. We don't know. But we do know that given that second chance from Nick Saban, he was able to accomplish all the great things that he did wind up accomplishing. So that helps me to understand that Nick genuinely cares for his guys. And that's what I think comes across when he's sitting in your living room and he's talking to your parents. He's talking to your uncles and aunts and your grandparents and whoever's taking care of you, your brothers, your sisters. He's taking care of you. He's going to help you and not throw you to the trash as soon as something goes wrong. And I salute him for that. But back to what I was saying about keeping coaches around that are innovative, keeping coaches around that know the game. Now, I'm not sure how big on innovation he is, but it's rumored that former Houston head coach Bill O'Brien is supposed to be coming in and interviewing for the offensive coordinator job at Bama, which is going to be vacant because Steve Sarkisian has just gone off and he's going to Texas to be their head coach, which is another guy. He brought Steve Sarkisian, a guy who was a head coach at USC in Southern California, got into some trouble. He brought him in as a guy to just, I think they called him a consultant. He brought him in. Then, what did he do? He got an opportunity to coach for the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, and like him or not, like, I think he was put behind the eight ball with Atlanta because you asked this guy to come in and run another man's system. So he didn't look very good. So when Atlanta let him go, Saban brought him back. So there's those two. And I think Atlanta let him go, Saban brought him back to fill the shoes of Lane Kiffin, who had kind of been the same type of guy. He was kind of a troublemaker coach, loudmouth type coach. And a lot of teams weren't fooling with him because of his demeanor. Well, he came in, Saban took him under his wing, and he got the stamp of approval, and he was able to go back out in the world and continue coaching. So, there, like I said, there's those guys. He had an imprint on Kirby Smart, you know, Kirby Smart from UGA. I mentioned Lane Kiffin, Jimbo Fisher, Will Muschamp, Jim McElwain, Jeremy Pruitt, Mark D'Antonio. All of these guys have been influenced and fall under the Nick Saban tree. Not only that, during his stint in the NFL, he's had guys around him similarly, like Jason Garrett, Scott Linehan, Mike Mularkey, Dan Quinn, and Pat Shermer. Every media outlet that's probably going on today is probably trying to get clicks, and they're probably trying to run this headline. You've probably seen it. Is Nick Saban a better head coach than Bill Belichick? And it's funny because they're friends. Saban actually coached under Belichick at their time with the Cleveland Browns. I mean, and we can have that debate. We can have that debate another time. But I want to catch back to the Bama game as they defeated the Ohio State Buckeyes. I mentioned earlier, Devontae Smith. Man, Devontae Smith was unstoppable. If he hadn't broken his fingers, I'm saying my man would probably still be scoring touchdowns. He wound up with 12 catches, 215 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Like I said, if he hadn't broke his fingers, he'd still be running all up and down the field on Ohio State. Najee Harris had 22 carries, 79 yards, 2 touchdowns, rushing. He had 7 catches and 79 yards and 1 touchdown receiving. And that was a hell of a catch. Like, you want to get your draft stock up as a running back, show him you can catch the ball at the backfield, make a couple guys miss, and then get your ass in the zone. So with those two guys being the highlight, Mac Jones was out here like he couldn't miss. He was 36 for 45, 464 yards. He threw 5 touchdown passes with no interception. On the Ohio State end, like, what can I say, man? Like, And this was the reason why I picked Alabama. It was just too much. It was too many weapons. It was too much to go up against. Alabama is a juggernaut. I don't know what kind of condition Justin Fields was in. Like, I don't. He owned it, though. Like, he said himself, like, he didn't make any excuses. He was quoted saying, I was able to be out there. So, whatever my performance was, like, I'm not going to make any excuses. I was able to play. So, there's that. And he didn't look bad, but he didn't really look impressive. He didn't look like he looked against Clemson. He passed for 194 yards, a little over 50% passing. He was 17 for 33 and one touchdown pass. He had about 67 yards rushing. Trey Sermon got hurt early. I mean, and that was key. He was going to be a significant cog in the machine that was going to be Ohio State if they were going to roll over Alabama, because they were going to need to control the clock. And controlling the clock, you needed to run. And you can't run if your star running back is on the sideline. Now, Master Teague did his thing. He came out and he was able to play too. But he's not Trey Sermon. Trey Sermon is that shiftiness, that quickness. Make guys miss. Master Teague is more of, I'm going to put my head down and I'm going to plow your ass over. He's more of the goal line back in this scenario. But back to Justin Fields. I don't know if this hurts his draft stock. I hope it does not. But it's going to be interesting. Like, it's also going to be interesting to see if this game or this season has elevated Mac Jones' draft stock. But once again, I'd like to congratulate the Alabama Crimson Tide for defeating the Ohio State Buckeyes and winning the college football national championship. Speaking of football, man, the NFL was hot this weekend. Woo! It was the super wild card. That's what they call it, a super wild card. And looking back, I was 4-2. Like I told you, I went with Seattle and they lost. I went with Pittsburgh and, yep, they lost. But it was some good games happening. Buffalo and the Colts was a good game. Tampa Bay beat the Washington football team. The Ravens and the Titans was a pretty good game. Ravens defeated the Titans 20-13. And did you get a chance to see the Nickelodeon broadcast of the New Orleans Saints and the Chicago Bears? And if you're a Bears fan, man, I am so damn sorry. Like, the defense played their ass off. They did. But the offense couldn't do nothing. Like, they couldn't do shit. Like, it was embarrassing. So, as I'm watching the game and I'm seeing the Saints play pretty good football, the Bears defense play pretty good football, the score started to stretch a little bit, and I decided around the halftime, like, let me go check out what they're doing over here at Nickelodeon, because on my Twitter feed is people showing the Nickelodeon feed and it's slime going on. They got people looking like Full House and Henry Danger, and they're doing all kind of crazy stuff, and SpongeBob going on in the intro. And so I turned it over. I checked it out. I thought it was dope. It's not something that I would want to see every game, but it's cool. It was a cool little thing. If you have kids or you have someone that does not know football and they would like to know football, that would be the broadcast for them to watch, because they would have this kid pop up and he would explain what offsides was and then compare it to something that happens to you on the day-to-day basis, or pass interference and things like that. And it had a couple. It had Nate Burleson, and I'm not sure of the young lady's name, but I know she's on the new broadcast of all that.
because my daughter watches it, and I know every time I look up, the little girl is playing like Beyonce. She had a little skit, Bed Bath and Beyonce, but she was on the broadcast. The other little kid that was on there, he was on the from All That. He was there too. And forgive me for not knowing these actors' names, but he was on there too. And I know he played Denzel in one of the skits, which I found hilarious because he's doing an impression of Denzel from Training Day. But I'm looking around like, I'm not any damn kids. No, no. Ain't none of these kids watch no damn Training Day. But he's doing the Denzel impression from Training Day. And that's his role. Well, that's one of his roles on All That. But let me get back to the game. So Bears couldn't do nothing. Saints beat them 21-9. And we talked about the Browns and Steelers already. I think it's time for Big Ben to go ahead and hang him up, but he won't, because Big Ben is scheduled to make somewhere around like $40 million in this last contract. I know he's a cap hit of about $41 million. So if I'm about to get $40 million, I ain't going nowhere. I'll stand here, hold his clipboard. Y'all can draft a quarterback. Y'all do what you want to do. You can bring Cam in. You should trade for Deshaun Watson. I don't care. But guess who's going to be over here in a Pittsburgh Steelers uniform? Yup. Me. Collecting my dough. So, like I said, 4-2 for the wild card, super wild card. And this week we have the divisional round. Man, these games get tighter and tighter, bro. Like Saturday, 4:30 on Fox, the Los Angeles Rams got to take themselves up to the frozen tundra. You're going to Wisconsin in January to take on Aaron Rodgers. And we've already seen what Rodgers could do in the snow. Remember that game him and Devontae Adams was going crazy? Yeah. So, I know what I told you about Aaron Donald. I know what I told you about Jalen Ramsey. I know. But give me discount double check and the Green Bay Packers. The Baltimore Ravens are taking on the Buffalo Bills. Whoo! This will be a good one. That's the Saturday night game. Saturday on NBC, 8:15. I'm taking the Ravens. I'm taking the Ravens because they're primarily a run team. If they're playing this game at Buffalo, they're playing this game at Buffalo at night. It's going to be cold. And I think it's Buffalo. I mean, I think the Ravens are more set up for the run than Buffalo. Think about what Buffalo has been doing. Buffalo has been asking Josh Allen to hook up with Stephon Diggs, on a lot of passes down the field. They've been doing more down the field than you would normally see with a Buffalo Bills team. And that's going to come back and bite them in the ass as they take on the Ravens. I think Lamar Jackson is going to run. J.K. Dobbins is going to run. And then you're going to hit your guys going across. You hit your tight ends. You'll hit your Dez. You'll hit Hollywood every now and then if you take a shot down the field. So I like Baltimore. Browns and the Chiefs. Sunday at 3. In the words of Chase Claypool, they're going to get clapped. Yeah, they're going to get clapped. Give me the Chiefs, man. Everybody's down on the Chiefs because the Chiefs have been playing down to the level of competition. But it's the playoff time. And I think the Browns are just happy to have a playoff win. And the Chiefs are going to pull out all the guns and take this one running. Here's where it gets tough, though, ladies and gentlemen. The Saints versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. If you know me, You know I hate the Saints. But boy, they've been playing some good football. And so is Tampa Tom. Tampa Tom's been playing some pretty good football, too. He's utilizing all his weapons. I'm not sure if Mike Evans is a go as of right now. But all of that being said, they're playing in New Orleans, too. Damn! I'm trying to decide, y'all. Please bear with me. Man, damn it. I'm going with the Buccaneers because I hate the Saints. And this shit has to stop somewhere. I told you last week they can't win no damn Super Bowl. Don't let them win the Super Bowl. So I'm going to pick everybody who's going against the Saints until they damn lose. And then, as I told you. So I'm taking Tampa Tom and the swashbuckling Buccaneers to defeat the New Orleans Saints in Sunday night's game on Fox. So, there you have it. I got the Saints. I got the Buccaneers. I got the Chiefs. I got the Ravens. And I got the Packers. Yep. So, once again, I thank you for tuning in to the Commissioner's Conversation. I'm your host, Commissioner Gordon. I thank my partners at Coffee and Kush. And I thank my sponsors, 323 Custom Apparel and Greenwood Whiskey. It's a celebration whiskey. Once again, I thank you for tuning in to the Commissioner's Conversation. I look forward to seeing you on the other side of the week. Until then, I'll holler.
Okay, bye.